Brian, thank you very much. World leaders have agreed to take swift action, including an unprecedented package of sanctions in the event of a Russian incursion in Ukraine. A video conference with the US President Joe Biden and leaders from Europe and NATO took place last night, and the allies agreed that the international community should not tolerate any action which undermines Ukrainian sovereignty. In a moment, I'll be speaking to Luke Harding of the Guardian newspaper, who is in Kiev. But first, Thomas Byrne, Minister for European Affairs, is on the line now from Brussels. Minister, thank you very much for joining us. And before we get into the specifics of Ukraine, what's your response to this news that we heard over the weekend and yesterday that the Russian military are going to perform drills off the southwest coast of Ireland?
Well, of course, as Minister Coveney said, and said it directly to the ambassador, Russia are not welcome here. This is very, very worrying as to what they're doing. The difficulty we have is that they are entitled to do this under international law. In our exclusive economic zone. That's the difficulty that we have. And once they give notification to the Irish Aviation Authority, they are in compliance with international law. The problem that we have at the moment is, of course, what's happening on the border with Ukraine, where there's a massive amount of Russian troops and tanks and equipment lined up at the border. Mm-hmm. Huge amounts more of that equipment coming by train every single day through Russia and into Belarus as well. And I think this is really a moment of great danger in Europe at the moment, and I'm not sure that we're fully apprised of the seriousness of the situation, that there is war looming in Europe, and I think it is extremely, extremely worrying.
Is that what you think?
Oh, yes. I mean, I think it's. I think we're in a very, very precipitous situation. There have been diplomatic efforts going on for weeks and months now at this stage to try to prevent this. We support all efforts to try to stop this. This would be very dangerous if it happens. My Eastern European colleagues, who I'm engaging with here in Brussels today, they're all extremely concerned, extremely worried. And we are showing, as a European Union, 100% full solidarity with Ukraine. They're entitled to their integrity of their sovereign area. They're entitled to set their own destiny as a country. We must support democracy there, and we must support their rights as a sovereign state.
So I take it from your answer there that what's happening off the southwest coast of Ireland doesn't concern you because you feel we have bigger fish to fry. And you mentioned
Absolutely not. I said the exact opposite.
Well,
I was giving the context.
Yeah, but you're saying we're on the brink of war. So, you know, we have expressed our disapproval to the ambassador. We know the ambassador has swatted those concerns away, saying that the controversy has been hugely overblown. This is not a threat to Ireland. So should we be worried about it?
Yes, we're very concerned about it. We don't want it happening. And in fact,
but there's nothing
really
we can do about it.
Well, the reason I set out the situation in Ukraine is really to give context for this and why we're concerned about this. I mean, these types of exercises have happened at other times in the past by Russia and by other countries. And unfortunately for us and for everybody, because we're not the only place these are happening, are planned to happen next month. There are a number of other examples around the world. International law allows them to happen, and that's the reality. This is not our territorial water as such. It's a separate category, our exclusive economic zone. And international ships are allowed to go through this once they notify. That's simply the reality that the Irish government faces. But really, I was expressing the very seriousness of the situation by giving that context of what's going on in Ukraine.
And you were at that dinner, weren't you, in Stockholm on Wednesday last week, where Anthony Blinken, the US Secretary of State, and his Russian counterpart, Sergei Lavrov, they were trading threats of serious consequences should either side escalate these tensions on the Ukrainian border. The rhetoric is certainly ramping up. But what can you tell us about that meeting?
Well, look, I mean, that meeting was in December in Stockholm, was to the OSCE, and I suppose that the OSCE, the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, I mean, that's a forum where East and West can basically get together, countries across Europe, Asia, and North America in particular. And yes, the meeting was extremely tense, it has to be said. There certainly was a wide-ranging discussion, particularly between Lavrov and Blinken, and indeed the Ukrainian foreign minister as well. And I think that the OSCE is a difficult format as well, because there are, you know, it operates by consensus. But it is a format where, you know, people can have diplomatic discussions, and the more talking I think that we have, I think the better. But it certainly made clear to me when attending that meeting quite how serious the situation was. Talking to all of our colleagues here, they're extremely concerned about it.
And the Irish embassy in Kiev, it's a relatively new mission. The British and the American administrations, they've decided to reduce their staff. Have we plans to do the same?
Well, no, the European position is different on this, and in fact was the subject of discussions yesterday when Minister Coveney was here in Brussels at the Foreign Affairs Council. So European missions in general are not taking their people home. I think it's very important that we obviously continue to review the security situation in Ukraine. We're doing that all the time, and obviously the safety of people there is very, very important. But it's also important that we show full solidarity with Ukraine and not simply walk away from that. I think we've done that consistently. The embassy was opened there last August by Minister Coveney. I think it's a very, very important signal of relations between Ireland and another sovereign, independent country with whom I suppose we need to get to know better. We have a lot of Irish citizens there. Now, what we're asking is that Irish citizens register with the embassy. Our experience in situations such as this is that however amount of Irish people we have registered, there's usually multiples more who aren't registered. And I think it's very, very important that they do in case of the outbreak of hostilities. And we are inviting people not to go to Ukraine at the moment on any non-essential business or travel whatsoever.
And if you are there, you should register with the embassy, as you said.
If you're living there, yeah.
Now, the Biden administration is reportedly planning a showdown with Russia at the UN Security Council if it invades Ukraine. Can you just tell us more about what the thinking is at EU level about the type of response that would make him think twice? Are there any fresh sanctions under discussion?
Yes. I mean, sanctions are under discussion at a European level and under quite detailed discussion at the moment. So what's happening is that the European Commission is talking to member states. Yesterday, obviously, at the Foreign Affairs Council, where Minister Coveney sits, that was one of the main topics being discussed. And there are ongoing conversations about this. But make no mistake, what the European leaders agreed in December, including our Taoiseach, Micheál Martin, was there would be massive consequences for Russia if it invades Ukraine. And there's no doubt, there's absolutely no doubt about that. And what's being worked on now is to make sure that we can, first of all, prevent this happening. That's key. We cannot allow this to happen. There will be huge amounts of deaths. There will be a huge refugee crisis.
If you're looking at this from Vladimir Putin's point of view, you're probably willing to take a gamble because he suffered no consequences just about when he invaded Georgia and annexed Crimea. I mean, he's playing chicken and he knows what the odds are here because of precedent.
Well, We're a militarily neutral country. We support the territorial integrity of countries. That's why we can support Ukraine. We're not getting involved on the military side. However, I'm absolutely confident that in terms of sanctions that have been worked out, they will hit Putin where it hurts if he decides to press ahead with this invasion, as quite frankly looks like it. But that's the armory that we have. Russia has a lot of economic activities right around the world, a lot of dependencies. And we have to make sure he is hit where it hurts and that his people know that what he's doing is completely unacceptable. And he's bringing down Russia, bringing it down to a level where it loses not only respect from the rest of the world, but also economic cooperation. And that will, I think, have an extremely unfortunate effect for people in Russia. And he's got to live with the consequences of that. And I think we've got to support whatever we can to prevent this happening. And if it does happen, to make sure that Putin is punished with those massive consequences that the European leaders mentioned in the conclusions of the
Minister, I want to finish by asking you about one domestic story affecting your own department now. And your party colleague, the junior minister, Anne Rabbit, has called for an external investigation of this so-called champagne party in the Department of Foreign Affairs. Do you think that's necessary?
Well, I mean, I thought about this. I mean, look, there's an investigation ongoing by the Secretary General. I have full confidence in that. The Secretary General is the person who is accountable to the Dáil. He's the accountable officer. He's the one who has to go in and answer questions on this. So I think he is the appropriate person to do that. I'm reluctant to say too much more while that goes on. I hope that would be concluded in relatively short order.
It's just that the Taoiseach said that civil servants aren't answerable to politicians.
Well, the one person that is answerable for as accountable officer of the department is the Secretary General, and in fact the previous Secretary General was in before, as I recall, the Oireachtas Committee in relation to the appointment of Catherine Sapone. So there's no doubt that when this investigation is concluded, when it's published, that it will be subject to scrutiny, and presumably it will set out the facts of what happens, as any employer would not just want to know, but need to know exactly what happened. Okay. I'm welcoming that this investigation is taking place by the Secretary General.
Minister for European Affairs, Thomas Byrne, thank you for joining us. More on the Russia story in a moment, because we'll have analysis from Luke Harding in Kiev in just a moment.
Today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
I'm joined now from Kiev by Luke Harding, foreign correspondent with The Guardian newspaper. Luke, I know you were listening there to Thomas Byrne, Ireland's Minister for European Affairs, and he was saying a war is looming and went on to say Putin will be hit where it hurts. Give us a sense of where things are at in Kiev at the moment.
Well, I mean, it's sort of strange sitting in Kiev and hearing Thomas talk in pretty dramatic terms about what may happen here. I mean, certainly the mood on the streets is pretty calm. There's no panic. Bars are full, restaurants are full. You know, people are just carrying on with life. But and I do think the mood here has darkened in the last few days. And you know, I've been talking to kind of Ukrainians who are making tentative plans about what to do in the event of a Russian attack, you know, from you know, buying in supplies of vegetables and pasta to filling up their cars, and you know, thinking about trips to the dacha out of town or possibly to the west of the country where it's likely to be kind of calmer and quieter. And one other thing I've sort of noticed is there does seem to be a bit of a generational divide between younger people who get their news from the internet and really across the latest political developments, and an older generation who may not have quite grasped the scale of this crisis. I talked to one young woman yesterday who said she sort of talked to her mother and said, "Look, Mum, time to do something." To which the reply was, "Well, what does Vladimir Putin want with me?" And of course, that, you know, that's the question that we don't know the answer to. What does Vladimir Putin want with Ukraine? And I guess we'll find out soon.
And the West is showing a united front on Ukraine. You know, we're hearing that from both sides of the Atlantic. Does that spark confidence in Ukraine?
Well, I mean, confidence-ish. I mean, certainly there's been a lot of kind of gratitude for the delivery of weapons that have arrived here in recent weeks from the US, from the Baltic states. The UK, I have to say, is very popular after a consignment of anti-tank weapons was flown in recently. But what the Ukrainians say is, look, we need more and we need it now. We need sort of sanctions now. We need punitive measures now to deter an invasion before it happens rather than after the event. But the other kind of interesting theme here is that I've spent a long time on the front line in the East. I've done two road trips there in the last 2 months. And the soldiers I've talked to say, yeah, the Russian army is superior to us, but we're defending our homes. We're highly motivated. And moreover, we're much more professional and better equipped than we were in 2014, where actually Russian forces basically rolled over the Ukrainian army in pretty short order. So I think if there is an attack or an invasion, that there will be resistance. The Russians may be able to take territory, but the question is, will they be able to hold it in the face of, you know, near universal hostility from people here?
And would you expect, or does Ukraine expect, that if sanctions were taken now against Russia, prior to any action being taken, that would have an impact on Putin's decision to go ahead or not?
Well, I mean, it, you know, that's impossible to know, Claire. And as always with Putin, we're trying to peer inside his head. And we know that he feels very emotionally about Ukraine. He wrote a long essay last summer saying Ukraine and Russia were one people, that all of the pieces are there for a war, for an attack. But I think all Ukraine can do, and the embattled government of Volodymyr Zelensky, is to appeal for help from the West, and to also make clear that the bill will be high. I mean, not just in terms of sanctions, but also in terms of sort of casualties. That actually there will be a fight. That many Russian soldiers and conscripts will be killed. And this won't be a walkover. There'll be a price to pay. But we don't know whether Putin is prepared to pay that price. It looks for the moment as if he is.
Mm-hmm. And just going back then to how Ukrainians are dealing with all of this, you know, when you see the United States deciding to take some of their personnel out, I know the United Kingdom did the same. What impact does that have, or does it have any?
Well, actually, the foreign ministry here in Kiev was pretty irritated by that move. Interesting to know that the Irish embassy has not followed suit, and nor have other European Union embassies so far. They were saying this was an overreaction. And what they kind of make clear is that there are mind games going on, that there's a full-blown informational campaign by Russia to suggest that Ukraine is a failed state run by fascists supported by the Americans and the CIA. And there's a clear attempt to sort of demoralize and panic and terrify people here. And the government, by contrast, is being saying, look, you know, we've been living with the situation for almost 8 years. There is a war already in which around 14,000 people have been killed. And actually, you know, we've got used to the situation and we should carry on much as we've been doing in the last few months and years.
And what about the notion that at this stage, it could still all be pulled back from the brink? And France is holding a meeting tomorrow between Ukraine and Russian officials. I mean, are there any hopes that that might lead to some progress?
I mean, I don't think so. Personally, I'm quite sceptical. I mean, I think, you know, having worked in Russia for The Guardian for 4 years, I've got some understanding of how the Kremlin operates. And it's pretty clear after these extraordinary maximalist demands that Ukraine should not only be allowed to join NATO, but Russia should be given a sphere of influence over Central and Eastern Europe, as it had in Cold War times. I mean these are incredible demands. They're non-starters as far as the Americans are concerned. And Putin has to emerge from this crisis with something, either on European security architecture or on the future of Ukraine and the territories in the east, which Moscow effectively already controls. So he can't really de-escalate without a win. And it's hard to see how he can get a win without employing what Moscow euphemistically calls military technical means in the next few days and weeks.
I'm sure you're aware that the Met Police have just announced that they're going to investigate the Downing Street parties. And I'm just interested to hear that Boris Johnson's intervention in sending over hardware has been welcomed. He's also been speaking about sanctions against Russia. But just how much weight does he hold given the domestic problems that he has?
Well, I mean, I think the Ukrainians are grateful for support from wherever it comes, military support. I mean, obviously, I know Ireland can't send arms because it's sort of a neutral country, but they're not.
We don't
fussy.
Have any.
You don't have, we haven't got any. Okay, well,
we may have sent them had we had any, but we don't have any.
So it's moot. I mean, there is an attempt by Boris Johnson, I think, to sort of show leadership on the Ukraine crisis and to prove that post-Brexit Britain is more nimble, perhaps, than its European Union counterparts. But I mean, Boris Johnson's problem is that we've talked about this before, that the Conservative Party is awash with Russian money for various Moscow-linked donors, and London is Leningrad. It's a favourite home and playground for Russian oligarchs. And really, if Boris Johnson is serious about doing something about this, he needs to kind of start at home before anywhere else.
It was interesting talking to you in Kiev, Luke. You just don't sound as worried as our Minister for European Affairs in Brussels.
Well, I mean, it's sort of psychology. I mean, it's subjective. If I look out of the window, you know, I'll tell you why. I can see Claire. I can see snow. It's quite cold here. It's about minus 10. It's a bright day. There are cars on the streets, buses, people wandering around. You know, cafes are full. I can see a sort of beautiful row of Art Deco houses and the Kiev Planetarium. And for now, all is calm. I mean, all is fine until it isn't. So it's not that people are naive or kidding themselves. It's just that you know, one person I talked to said, "Yeah, you know, we're concerned, but life goes on, and so does work, and so does pleasure." It's the sort of human dimension, which I think is sometimes lost when we think all the time about geopolitics. But plenty of people here, normal people, wanting normal life. And for now, that's what they're doing.
Well, Luke, it's good to talk to you. And I'm sure we'll chat again. Luke Harding there, foreign correspondent with The Guardian newspaper in Kiev. As I mentioned, the story has been breaking while we're on air this morning that the Metropolitan Police has launched an investigation into a number of events, as they say, in Downing Street and Whitehall over potential breaches of coronavirus regulations. Here's Met Police Commissioner Cressida Dick speaking to the London Assembly earlier.
And what I can tell you this morning is that as a result, firstly, of the information provided by the Cabinet Office inquiry team, and secondly, my officer's own assessment, I can confirm that the Met is now investigating a number of events that took place at Downing Street and Whitehall in the last 2 years in relation to potential breaches of COVID-19 regulations. My officers have assessed several other events that appear to have taken place at Downing Street and Whitehall. On the available information, these other events are assessed as not reaching the threshold for criminal investigation. Throughout the pandemic, the Met has sought to take, as I have said, a proportionate approach. I should stress that the fact that we are now investigating does not, of course, mean that fixed penalty notices will necessarily be issued in every instance and to every person involved.
Twists and turns. That's the Met Police Commissioner Cressida Dick speaking a little earlier. Coming up in a few minutes, we'll be getting the latest on what is said to be a very difficult position for the Ulster Unionist leader Doug Beattie, who's under pressure over controversial tweets he sent in the past. And speaking on the Nolan Show on BBC Radio Ulster this morning, he said he will consider his future should he be asked to do so.
I go back 10 years, then there's a clear failing in myself, and I have to own up to that, and therefore I have to look and see, is this the sort of person who has to lead the Ulster Unionist Party? And I will speak to my MLA group today, and I will speak to my party officers through my chairman, Danny Kennedy, and if either group feels I should step down, then I will. Likewise, if they think I should refer myself to the party executive or the wider council on a vote of no confidence, then I shall do that as well, and the party will decide whether or not they can continue to follow my leadership. This is more than one person, but it's clear that that what I did 10 years ago is pretty horrific. It's pretty horrendous. I am deeply ashamed, deeply embarrassed by it. I can apologise day and night to this. It won't change what I did 10 years ago. And that's where we are, now.
Doug Beattie speaking to Stephen Nolan there. More on that later, but now we'll take a quick break.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.